Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Bavmin Siyah Daf Beis. Always exciting starting a new Masechta. The Gemara Naman Aleph today is basically going to discuss two people who both have a claim on the same object, how exactly it should be split, and why the Mishnah is phrased in the way that the Mishnah is phrased. The Gemara Naman Beis is going to try to deal with who could be the author of our Mishnah or who could not be. Could it be like Ben Anas? Could it be like Simflus? Could it be like the Rabbanan? We'll have to see all of those positions in Tanayim. Maybe we'll just start with a short hakdama to the Masechta, to Bavmin Siyah. As we know probably from Bava Kamma already, most Rishonim assume that Bava Kamma, Bava Metzia, and Bava Basra are all one large Masechta called Masechet Nezikin with 30 prakim, and that's why each of the Bavas has 10 prakim each. Bava Metzia, Bava Kamma, Bava Basra, literally the gates, the first gate, the last gate, and the middle gate. So that's the general assumption in Rishonim. The Rambam writes about each of the Masechtas and why they're in the order that they are in Shas and in the Hagdama to the Rambam's Peres of Mishnayos. And he suggests that the reason we start with Bava Kamma and then Bava Metzia, even though it is one Masechta, but why was the whole larger Masechta arranged in such a way? So he says, once we're going to deal with financial obligations, the first thing we have to do is make sure you remove all danger and make sure you're not injuring a person, make sure you're not hurting another person, and then we could talk about other dinim. So that's why we start with Bava Kamma, to make sure that a person gets rid of all dangers posed by his possessions, by himself. And then we move on to Bava Metzia, which is going to deal with other financial obligations. And the Rambam says that's also the way that it's organized in the Torah. We have first the dinim of boar and shor and of hever, of a person's ox and a person's pit and a person's fire, whatever the case may be. And then we move on to the dinim of shomrim, to watchmen, to workmen, etc. And that's why everything is formulated or ordered in the way that it is.
So 1/7 of this is basically just the vavas alone. It's almost like a year's worth of
I mean, Bava Basra is like a half a year. It's like 175 blot.
Yeah, but they're very tiny.
Yeah, very tiny. Davim, a lot of Rashbam, but a lot. So what is the Masechta going to speak about? So the first two prakim, Shnayim Ochsim, which is our parak, and Eilam Metzias, are going to speak about lost objects. When you find objects, what exactly you do with those. The third parak, parak Adamafkid, is going to talk about Pikadon, about deposits. The fourth parak, parak Hazav, is going to talk about Onah, overcharging somebody or undercharging somebody in purchases and various acquisitions. The fifth parak, Ezu Neshech, is going to talk all about ribis and interest payments. Parak HaSocher HaUmon, in the sixth parak, talks about Ona for renting, for craftsmen, other dinim of overcharging for service. Parak HaSocher HaPoalim speaks about workmen and watchmen, and various dinim related to those. Parak HaShoa HaSapara, maybe it's a misnomer because it speaks about a cow, but it's really about borrowing, renting houses, things like of that nature. The ninth parak, Parak HaMakabos Dechavero, deals with sharecroppers, payments for work, and things like that. And the last parak, Parak HaBais Ba'aliyah, deals with neighbors who live on top of each other. And that's really going to segue very nicely into Bava Basra, which starts with Hashutfin, people who are partners, but relates generally to Nizkei Shcheinim, to the damages caused by neighbors. And so that's a nice segue to start Bava Basra. And I guess in that theme, Bava Kamma also transitions nicely into Bava Metzia, as we mentioned in the Shor Machshava, Tosfos deals with here, that we were just speaking about how workmen split whatever is left from their work, whether it belongs to the Baal Bayis, if the Baal Bayis is Machbid, or whether it belongs to the person doing the work. So that translates then to speaking about, or transitions then to speaking about Chalukos, people who are arguing over things, how exactly we split those. So the Babas are all connected, really reflecting this thing that they're all one Masechta. So let's go ahead and get started with the first Mishnah. It says the Mishnah, Shnayim Ochsim Betalis, Ze Omer Ani Mitzasiya, Ze Omer Ani Mitzasiya. Let's say you have two people who are both grabbing on to the same talis, the same garment, or literally even the same talis. One of them is saying, I found it, and the other one is saying that I found it. Ze Omer Kula Sheli, Ze Omer Kula Sheli. One person says, this talis is entirely mine, and the other person says, no, it's entirely mine. So Ze Yishava She'en Lo Ba'Pachos Michatzia. One person should make an oath that he owns at least half of it. He owns no less than half. And the other person should also swear that he owns no less than half. And they should split the entire talis of what they're arguing over, because they can each claim at least half of it, and they both can concede to that. So they'll split it equally, since we have no other way to get out of this dispute.
So this is not like with the baby that you split in half, you know.
Right, And I guess that assumption, right, Shlomo HaMelech's Chachma, was if I say to split it in half, the woman whose baby it really is, going to say, let the other woman take it because she won't want her baby to be split. I don't know if such an assumption would hold up in the case of Shnayim Ochsim, right? Even if it's your own talis, you may be happy taking half of it as opposed to getting none of it. But by a baby, yeah, certainly relates. Zeomer kula shali, vezeomer chetzia shali. Let's say one person says, the entire talus is mine, and the other person says, half of it is mine. The one who says that it's entirely his should swear that he owns no less than 3/4 of it. And the person who says that half of it is his should swear that no less than 1/4 of it is his. And zeh notel shlosha chalakim v'zeh notel raviyah. The one who claims that it's entirely his and who swore that he owns no less than 3/4 of it, he's going to take 3/4 of it. The one who said it was only half his and swore that no less than 1/4 of it was his, will take that quarter. So if you look in Rashi here, Dibra Mascha v'zeh omer chetz yeshali, he explains how this second case is related to the first case. The person who's saying that half of it is his is modehu she'achetz yishol chavero. He agrees that the other half belongs to his friend, vein danin elach alchetzia, and they're only disagreeing about the second half, which he claims is his, and the other person says is also his. Hilkach zeh omer kula sheli yishava kimishpat arishon. Therefore, when the Mishnah spells out the dinim, that the person who says it's fully his has to swear that no less than 3/4 of it is his, and the person who says it's half his has to swear that no less than 1/4 of it is his, is kimish bar rishon. It follows the exact same pattern as the first case. Mashen danin alav nishban shneim she'ein lekol echa bo pachos mechatzio. The part that they disagree about, they're always going to make a shvua that each of them owns no less than half of that amount that they're disputing. Venotel kol echad chetzio. And each person is going to take half of the part that they're disputing. So when they each claim the whole thing, they're disputing the whole thing. Therefore, they each swear that at least half of it is theirs, and they'll split it and each get half. But when one guy says it's all mine and one guy says it's only half mine, then they're only debating the second half. That's why they're going to swear about half of that second half, 1/4, which is why the one person says 3/4 of mine, the other person says 1/4 of mine, and they split that half that they're disputing, but it follows exactly the same din as the first case in the Mishnah. Now continues the Mishnah, Hayushnaim rochvim agabe behema. Let's say two people were riding on an animal, o shahaya echad rochev echad manik, or one person was riding on the animal, and one person was leading the animal, was, let's say, pulling it by a rope, zeo merkula sheli v'zeo merkula sheli. One person, the person riding it, let's say, I guess it goes back to the case where they're both riding too, but let's say the person riding it says it's all mine, and the person leading it says it's all mine. Zeh yushava she'en lo ba'pachos mechatzia, v'zeh yushava she'en lo ba'pachos mechatzia, v'yachloku. Each one should swear that they own no less than half of the animal, and they'll split it exactly like the first case in the Mishnah, not like the second, because they're both claiming that they own the whole thing. So what does this case really come to teach us if it parallels the exact first case? So it says Rashi, Dibur Matchil, Hayu Shnayim Rochvim, the Ashmeininata, the Rochev, Umanhek, Shneim Shavin, Liknos, Behema, Minahevker. What this case is really teaching us, Rashi doesn't address when they're both riding the animal, but Rashi says when one person is riding it and one person is leading it, you might think that one of them is more muchzak, one of them has more possession of it than the other. Rashi doesn't spell out which one you would think. I could hear both arguments. You might say the person leading it is more likely to be considered the full owner, or the person riding it might be considered to be the full owner. Rashi doesn't say. But Rashi tells us that what the Mishnah is telling us is that they're both equal. That one person riding and one person leading is the same as two people holding on to the same talus. Memela, they're both claiming that it's theirs, and they both have credibility, and that's why they'll end up splitting it.
So if they split it, they become shutfis, then they're partners.
In the animal, in theory, it would seem that they would become partners because we're not going to, presumably, not going to split the animal in half, right?
Oh, you would sell it and split the money.
You would sell it.
Right, that's seemingly also a possibility, yeah. So by the talus, I think once we split it, they're not shutzpin, they just each own half of the original talus. But with something that might not be able to split, so maybe they'll become shutzpin, or maybe you'll sell it and split the money. And concludes the Mishnah, chokim below shvua. When the people agree or they have edim about their claim, then they could divide it up below shvua. Now, what exactly that means that they're agreeing if they each are claiming the whole thing? A little bit unclear. Rashi says the Gemara is going to explain on Daf Ches, so still a ways away, what exactly this last clause in the Mishnah is telling us. So I asked the Gemara, Lamali lemisni zeomer animus asiya, vezeomer animus asiya, zeomer kula shali, vezeomer kula shali, venichada. Why do I need the Mishnah to tell me that the one person is claiming that he found it, and then we stop and say the other person is claiming that he found it, and then we go back and say the first person says it's all mine, and we go to the second person and says that the whole thing is mine? Why don't we just teach it all as one case? We could combine the entire those clauses of the Mishnah. So answers the Gemara, yeah, Charakatani. We really were only teaching one clause. Zeomer ani mitzasiya v'kula sheli. Zeomer ani mitzasiya v'kula sheli. The first person is saying, I found it and it's all mine. And the second person is saying, I found it and it's all mine. Don't think it's getting broken up and saying, it's all I found it, it's all mine, it's all mine. It's really all one clause. Each person is saying, I found it and it's all mine. Now the Gemara is going to deal with how exactly you could say that that's what the Mishnah said. That doesn't really seem to fit the Lashon, but we'll get to that in a few lines. So ask the Gemara, V'litni ani mitzasiya, v'ana yadana dekula sheli. Why did the Mishnah just say that I found the item, that I found the talis, and I'll know that it's entirely mine? Someone who claims that they found something obviously is claiming that it's all theirs. So itana ani mitzasiya, if the Mishnah had taught that I found the item, hava amina my mitzasiya, I would have thought that what does he mean when he says that he found the item? Re'isiya, he means that he saw the item. Even though the item did not come into his possession, the item did not come into his hand, you might think that he could be kone, he can acquire the item just by seeing it. And therefore, Tana kula shali de bereiya lo kani. Therefore, the Mishnah teaches the phrase kula shali, that it's entirely mine, to tell you that you cannot acquire something bereiya, you cannot acquire something just by seeing it. So that's why we need both of these statements, anima sasiya and kula shali, because anima sasiya only implies that you saw it. Kula shali implies that it actually came into your possession, that you're actually holding on to it, and that's why we need both of these phrases. So ask the Gemara, umimatsita amarta, umimatsis amras, my mitzasiya reitiya. Can you really suggest that when we say, I found it, that that means that I saw it? The ha'amar of Nai, Rav Nai, or perhaps the Girsa should be Ravina, the Mesoras Hashanah says, and we saw this not so long ago, last Friday, I think, in Baba Kama, Kufya Gimel Mebeis, Umetzasa da'asai liyode mashma. Ravina told us that umtzasa, when the Pasuk says that you find a lost item, that means that it comes into your possession. And Rashi clarifies what exactly this is talking about, that when we exclude an Ove Kochavim and we tell you that you don't have to return the lost item of an Ove Kochavim, that includes a case of umetzasa da'asa liyode mashma, where you actually bring the item into your rishus. Don't think that the Torah only doesn't require you to return the item of an Ove Kochavim when it has not come into your possession. When it has come into your possession, you have to return it to the Ove Kochavim. So it says the Gemara, based on this pasuk, umtzasa da'asa liyode mashma, that even where the item came into your hand, that's the type of aveda that the Torah refers to, and the responsibility to return it only applies to a Jew, but you would have no obligation, you have no responsibility to return it to a non-Jew. But bottom line, what the Gemara is bringing this here for is to tell us that umtzasa, the language of finding, clearly implies that something came into your possession. So how could we say umtzasiya just means that I saw it, and that's why we need to tell you kula shali, to tell you that you actually held on to it, that you actually acquired it and brought it into your possession? It's clear that umtzasa means that you brought it into your possession, not that you saw it. So answers the Gemara in umtzasa dekra da'asa liyade mashma. It's a good point. Really, umtzasa in the pasuk does mean da'asa liyade mashma. Generally, umtzasa or umtzasiya, that you found something, at least in the Torah, does mean that it came into your hand, not that you saw it. Umiyu, Tana lishna de almanaka, but our Tana, who's not bound to the language of the Torah, is using the general language that people use. Umidechazile, amar ana ashkachis, the afagav de la'ase liyada. And generally, when a person sees something, they say that they found it, even if it hasn't come into their possession. And therefore, biri'iya ba'almakani, you might think that when the Tana uses the language of umtzasiha, that I found something, he's using the general language of the land, that a person just saw it, and perhaps you could be kona just by seeing it. So Tana kula shali, the bereiya be'alma lo kanila. And that's why, as we said earlier, we have the second statement of kula shali, that the entire item is mine, which tells us that it actually came into your possession, that you're holding on to it. And it tells us that bereiya be'alma lo kanila, that you can't be kona something through vision, through sight alone. So then ask the Gemara, okay, well, now I understand. You told me why I need anim tzasiya, and you told me why I need kula shali. But, v'lini kula shali, v'lo bay anim tzasiya. Why not just teach kula shali, and you won't need anim tzasiya? If anim tzasiya just could have implied that you could acquire something through sight, and that's why you need kula shali to tell you you're actually holding on to it, so now just tell me kula shali that you're actually holding on to it. I don't need to know anything about being kona through sight, because that's going to be irrelevant. So answers the Gemara, itana kula shali, hava amina be'alma diktani mitzasiya b'ri'iya be'alma kani. If the Mishnah had said kula shali, that it's entirely mine, and not mentioned that you found it, I would have thought that in general, when we use the language of mitzasiya, when we use the language of finding something, that in general that would mean that you could be kona through vision alone. And therefore, Tana ani mitzasiya behader Tana kula sheli to be Mishnah yetera ashmiinon deriya lokani. Therefore, the Mishnah taught both ani mitzasiya and then taught kula sheli, because from the fact that we have both of these languages, that teaches us that in general reiya is lokani. That's how the Gemara explains all these lashonos. We couldn't have just taught ani mitzasiya because you would have thought that you could be kona something through reiya alone. Therefore, we needed the lashon of kula sheli. But we couldn't have just taught kula shali, because then we wouldn't have informed you anything about mitzasiya for the general case. So in general, when you would come across mitzasiya, that you found something, you would think that means the re'iyah alone. Therefore, we're always going to need both ani mitzasiya and kula shali to tell you that you have to actually hold on to it, and you can never be kona through re'iyah alone. So as Tosfos here, the second last divar machal on the page, the re'iyah ba'amalo kani, v'hadamrina b'perek habayis ba'aliyah habata b'hefker kani. We have a Gemara later on in Bava Metzia, which tells us that just seeing something, habata, to see something, would be kona when it comes to hefker. So how could we say that you can't be kona through re'iyah? The Gemara seems to say that you can acquire something that's hefker through re'iyah. So it says Tosfos, Hainu she'asa ma'isa koldehu kigon shegadar geder katan. And over there, when it says that you can be kona something through hefker, is assuming that you're doing some sort of action, like you're being go there and get there kata, and you're fencing in a small little fence, so you're not really being kona through habata, through vision alone. Seemingly you're being kona through a small chazaka, by making this small maisa, you're going to be kona, and therefore that gemara is not akasha, according to Tosfos. So now ask the gemara the question that we alluded to before. The gemara asked, why do we need to say ze omer ani mitzasiya, ze omer ani mitzasiya, ze omer kula sheli, ze omer kula sheli? We keep going back and forth between the parties. Why not just say their entire claim as one? So the Gemara answered that chada katani, that really they are saying it as one. Ze omer ani mitzasiya v'kula sheli. This one is saying that I found it and it's entirely mine, and this one is saying I found it and it's entirely mine. So ask the Gemara, mimitzita marta chada katani, v'haze v'ze katani. Ze omer ani mitzasiya, veze omer ani mitzasiya, ze omer kula sheli, v'chulei, ze omer kula sheli. So ask the Gemara, how can you say that it's all one clause if you have zes that are separating the different statements that are made by the person? If we say ze omer, this person says that he found it, and this person says that he found it, this person says it's all mine, this person says it's all mine, you can't combine that into one and just overlook the zes that are taught in the Mishnah. So Amar of Papa became Rav Simi Bar Ashi, the Omri Lo Kedi. Rav Papa says in the name of Rav Simi Bar Ashi, the Amri La Kedi. What does Kedi literally mean? Kedi literally means that it's like a nameless nothing. Statement, that it means nothing, that it wasn't said either by Rav Papa or Rav Simi Bar Ashi. There is a Rashi in Gittin, Daf Pei Hei Amabez, I believe at the bottom. Rashi says there are some versions that Kedi is a Shem Chacham, that when you use Kedi, not like Bichdi for no reason, but if you use Kedi when you're referring to who says a statement, so Rashi has one version that Kedi could be a Shem Chacham, and maybe it's saying that a person named Kedi said it. But the Pashtus is just that it's not being said in the name of a Papa or Simi Bar Ashi, but that it's just being said by the Gemara. Reisha b'mitziya b'seifa b'mekach u'mimkar. Don't be bothered by the different use of the Lashon Zeh, which would seem to tell us that it's not all one statement. Really, it is all one statement, and we're teaching you about two different cases. In the beginning of the Mishnah, we're teaching you about a mitziah. We're teaching you about an item that was found. And in the end of the Mishnah, we're teaching you about an acquisition, about mekach u'mimkar. Tosfos at the bottom just points out that this question of ha'zev zeh katani, how can we say it's all one case if we have the different use of the lashon zeh? So Tosfos says, ikaduchti de parch ki agavna, ve'ikaduchti de lo parch. Sometimes the Gemara is bothered by this question. How could you say it's all one if we have different zehs, we have different things interrupting it? Sometimes you don't bother to ask that question. But that's how the Gemara gets around this issue. We don't have to worry about the fact that you have zehs interrupting the different clauses, because we're teaching two different cases. We're teaching about a lost item, and we're also teaching about an acquired item. So ask the Gemara implicitly, why do we need both of these cases? Utsricha, we need to know both about a lost item and also about mekach u'mimkar, about something which is acquired. The Tana Mitzia, because if we only taught the din of Shnayim Oks and Talis when it comes to a lost item, Haba Amina Mitzia hu de Ramu Rabbanan Shvu Ale, Mishum de Mori ba Amar, Chavrai lav midi chaser ba, Ezo Apis ve Itplig ba Hade. If the Mishnah had only taught a case of Mitzia, of a lost item, so I would think only in the case of a Mitzia did the Rabbanan require each party to make a Shvuah. Because remember, we said that if both people are arguing and saying that the entire talis is theirs, they have to make a shvuah that no less than half of it is theirs, and then they can split it. So we might think that only by a lost item, only by a mitziah, or something that you find, do the Rabbanan require a shvuah. Because a person will be mori ve'amar, a person will be mora heter, they'll give themselves permission to do something that maybe is not right, that essentially they'll say, my friend just found this item. This item was lost, and my friend found it. He didn't do anything, he didn't spend anything in order to acquire it. And since he didn't spend anything, he's not really going to lose anything. And therefore, ezo atpis ve'etplig ba'adei, I'm going to go and grab onto this talis, and I'm going to split it with him. And I'm not worried that I'm going to cause him a direct financial loss, because at the end of the day, he didn't spend any money to acquire this item. So maybe only in such a case, where a person would be mora heter and allow himself to grab onto the person's item, would the Rabbanan require a shvua when you say that it's all yours, so we need you to make a shvua that no less than half of it is yours. But when it comes to mekach u'mimkar, when it comes to sales and purchases which are made by a person, where you cannot say this whole svara of mori ve'amar, there's no havamina, there's no possibility, or we're not choshesh, we don't suspect that a person is going to say, I'm going to go grab onto my friend's item and cause him to lose out, because you know that your friend spent money to acquire this item. So you're not going to justify, you're not going to rationalize to yourself how you can go grab onto the object and split it with him, because you know that that's going to cause him a great financial loss. So you might think in such a case, the Rabbanan would not require you to make a shvua when you say that it's all yours, and therefore you have to swear that no less than half of it's yours. Maybe the Rabbanan will just believe that claim, because you're not going to go on and grab onto something for no reason. Ve'itan emekach u'mimkar. And if we taught only a case of sales and acquisitions, but we did not teach a case of metzia, so then the Bach adds in a couple words here, hava amina hasam. I would think that only in a case of mekach u'mimkar, hu deramu rabbanan shvua aleh, maybe only in a case of mekach u'mimkar, only in a case of a sale would the rabbanan impose a shvua on you. Mishim demori ba'amar, chavrai d'mei kayahiv, v'ana d'mei kayahivna, sehashta d'tricha l'didi, ashkele ana, v'chavrai lezo l'tzrach lizban. You might be more heter in the case of a sale, and say, my friend gave money for this item, and I also am going to give money for this item, right? Rashi says, "Dmei kayahivna, damim ani rotza liten." I want to give money for this item. And since I need this item right now, maybe I'll give money for the item, and I'll take the item, and my friend will just go, v'chavrai lezo l'tzrach lizavin. My friend will go, and he'll have to bother himself to buy, burden himself to buy a new item. But when it comes to an item that was lost or found, you can't say that you're going to give money for something just like your friend gave money for something, because that's not the claim that you're trying to make. You're trying to say that you found something. You're not trying to spend any money. Therefore, maybe a person won't be more a heter to himself to grab onto this item and try to split it with his friend if he didn't actually find it. So we basically have opposite havaminas, whether a person is more likely to be more a heter to themselves in a case of a metzia, of a found item, and therefore only there should we require them to make a shvua that no less than half of it is theirs. But in a case of mekach u'memkar, maybe a person will not allow himself to grab onto the item for no reason, and we wouldn't even need a shvua to substantiate his claim. Or alternatively, maybe only by mekach u'memkar, maybe only when it comes to a sale, might a person just grab onto the item for no reason and say that it's his, and there we would require a shvua. But in a case of a metzia, where a person is not going to spend money for the item, they're not going to justify it, rationalize it to themselves, and we should believe their claim even without a shvua, and therefore tzricha, both of these cases are needed. We need to know the din of shnayim ochsen in both of these cases, and that we require a shvua in both a case of metzia, of an item that you find, and also mekach u'mimkar, a case of a sale or an acquisition, where you pay money for the item. So the Gemara is now bothered by the obvious question that emerges from Mekach u'Memkar, v'lichzi zuzim iman nakid. If you're going to tell me that Shnayim Oksin Betalis applies even to a purchase, then why don't we just look who the person who sold the item has money from? If they bought the items, if one of them bought the item, they're both claiming that they both bought it, just go to the person who sold it to them and see whose money he's holding on to. So answers the Gemara, lo tzricha, denaka mitarvayu. The case where we need to know the din of Shnayim Oksin must be a case where the seller has money from both parties, michad midaite u michad bal korche. From one of the parties he received payment knowingly, willingly, and from one of the parties he received payment against his will. Velo yadanu miu midaite u miu bal korche. And we're not sure which person gave him the money knowingly, willingly, and which person gave him the money against his will. Therefore, we don't know to whom the item really belongs, and therefore we say that they each have to make a shvua that no less than half of it is theirs, and they can split the item.
What would happen if we did know who gave it minate? Let's say the seller came to Bezdin as a single witness, and he said, I'm the seller, and I sold it to A. Would he be believed?
So there's a Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Ayin Gimel Mbeis, Rashi quotes it over here, that Ne'eman Balamekach Lomer Lezeh Macharti, Lezeh Lo Macharti, that a person, the person who owned the item before he sold it, is believed to say that he sold it to this person and not to this person. Even though he's an Eid Echad, yeah, because he's a Baal Mekach, he has Ne'emanus over the item that he sold. But the Gemara goes on to clarify, we could just see it in the Rashi if you guys want to follow along inside. Rashi, Dimer Matcha, V'lichzi Zuzi Miman Nakit. When the Gemara had suggested that we should see who the seller is holding on to the money of, so Rashi there says, after he quotes the Gemara, Ba'afa gav de Messiah, Bam de Var Mamurim, Shemikho Biyado, even though the Gemara concludes that we can only believe the seller when he's still holding on to the item that he owns, after he's received money for it, but he hasn't yet given over the item. Aval ein mikho biyado, ein onamon, Shelo Natan Leiv Ledover, Kokach Liot Zocher, Me'achar Sheshneim Chazur Achrav, Bepisuk Damea. But if the person no longer has the item in his possession, that he's not believed, because we assume once a person collects payment for the item, gets rid of the item, and the parties leave his presence, he's not going to remember who he sold the item to. He just knows he sold that item with that serial number, whatever it is, but he doesn't remember exactly to whom he sold it. So even though the Gemara does conclude like that, says Rashi, Ho kim nahatam bedinakat zuze mitrabayim mechamidaite mechabar korche, dekeven de lo ale rami la asude, lo dak kule hai lios nizar mishahalchum ilafanav, hai midaite de hai bal korche.
Why are you forced to say that they both gave money? What would be the case if he only has money from one person and he says, I don't know who gave it to me?
There's no room for rationalization if only one person gives money. If two people give money, then you can say there's room for rationalization, so we have to make him swear.
So what's the halacha?
What's the halacha what?
The guy says, I got money. I only have money for one person. I don't know who I got it from. Two people holding on to it. So what's the halacha?
So let's just conclude with the Rashi, because I think he addresses that also. I lost my spot here. So we said that when he gets money from both people, one Bal Korche and one Midaite, one against his will and one knowingly, then it's not really upon him to remember exactly who he got the money from. So we wouldn't know necessarily to whom the item belongs. And then Rashi concludes, I think addressing Rudy's question, he says, Aval Heicha Delo Kibo Damim Ela Michad Midkar Dakirle. In a situation where a person only received money from one person, he remembers exactly from whom he got it. So it sounds like Rudy's question is a great question. In theory, it could have been a possibility. It sounds like, according to Rashi, the Gemara is making an assumption that it will never happen that you only got money from one person and you don't remember, provided that you got money from one and only one person, you're always going to remember.
Because he won't rationalize. He can't, in other words, and he won't be so chutzpahdik to claim that if he didn't give money, he's not going to claim that a purchase that someone else made really was made to him.
Which relates back to the beginning when the Gemara is clarifying why we need both a case of Metzia and a case of Mekach Memkar, because a person wouldn't be so brazen to say that the item is his when it's not, if he didn't give money for it and he knows that his friend did, he doesn't want to be Machaser. Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, in this case, we both give money, we can't ask the storekeeper.
When two people
give money and he's gotten rid of the product, the storekeeper's testimony won't be sufficient to settle the case.
Yeah, and Rashi says here, he takes it out, a different girsa, but he says that even if the storekeeper gets money from both people, even if he says that he knows from whom he got the money from, Midaite, and from Bar Korche, he's still not believed, Mishahalcho, once the parties leave his presence, because we assume it's not upon him to remember, so he's unlikely to remember. We can't accept his testimony.
Where is the guy going now? He's not going out with money, right?
Right.
But so if one guy gets money and the other one does Hagbah, who owns it?
Don't they both do Hagbah in this case? Aren't they both holding on to it?
Right. I think in this case they're both holding on to it.
Holding on.
Right. If one person were to only do Hagbah, but they both in theory gave money, then I think
what's
the person who is Magbiah was Kona. And that's exactly the Gemara's discussion now, trying to figure out the authorship of the Mishnah based on different shitos and tanaim. So we're going to get into Hamotzi Mechaber al Baraya, we're going to get into Mamon Hamoto Basafik Cholkin, etc. So says the Gemara, Lema Masnisin de Loke Ben Nanos. The Iben Nanos, Aomer, Ketzad Elu Ve'elu, Boin Li Dei Shvuat Shav. Maybe our Mishnah, which required both parties to make a Shvuah, let's say in the case where they both claim it's all theirs, each party has to make a Shvuah that no less than half of it is theirs. So maybe that's against Ben Nanos, because Ben Nanos says, in a different case, we could maybe get into the details, but Ben Nanos says, how could each party be required to make a Shvuah if inevitably that's going to lead to both of them, Ben Nanos literally says, or at least one of them, is going to lead them to swearing falsely. If both people are going to claim that it's theirs, and we know it can't possibly be both of theirs, how could we require them both to make a shvuah? One of them is going to be lying, by definition. So answers Gemara, afilu teima benanos, hatam vada ika shvuat shav, hacha ika lememar deleka shvuat shav, emor de tarvayu bahari adadi agbuhu. You could even say that the Mishnah, which requires both parties to make a shvuah, is like Ben Nanas. Because in Ben Nanas' case, where he's bothered, that how could we require both parties to make a shvuah, hare, one of them is automatically going to make a shvuah shav, a false lie. In his case, you for sure have a shvuah shav. But our case is different. It's possible to say that there isn't a shvuah shav at all, because maybe each of them was kone bihagbah, maybe they both acquired the item through Hagbah at the same time. So when they each claim that it's theirs, they're not really lying. They're not making a false oath because it actually belongs to them. Now, how is Ben Nanas' case different from our case? Rashi explains in the Dimur Matzchil de Loke Ben Nanas what Ben Nanas' case was. Gabe Chenvani al Pinkaso, let's say you have a storekeeper who keeps a journal of all the transactions that he makes. Elu ve'elu boin the Bezdin amanat lishava. Both parties are going to come to Bezdin to make an oath. And Echad mehem lishav. One of them is going to make an oath that's false. How so? Because Amar Balabais lechavani, 10 livni chitin bedinar v'alai l'shalem, olapoalim b'selam o'os, shani chayiv b'scharim v'alai litein sela. Let's say a person says to the storekeeper, either give wheat to my son in the value of a dinar and I'll pay you back later, or give money, give a sela of money to my workmen that I am obligated to pay and I'll pay you back later. And hu omer natati? The storekeeper says that he gave whatever items were incumbent upon him to give to the other party. Behu omer lo natalti. Let's say the son says that he didn't receive the wheat. Or if you're following the poalim, so there's a different gersa that I saw in a different gemara. The behem omrim lo natalnu, that the poalim say they didn't get the payment. Ushneim tovim es balabayas. And now you have both parties making a claim against the person who's the father of the child, or the person who is responsible for the workman, because the storekeeper is saying, I did my job, and now you have to pay me back. And the people are saying, we didn't receive what we were promised to receive, and therefore you still owe us as payment. So shneim nishpaim benolim in balabayas. The din that the Gemara establishes is that both parties who have a claim against the Balabayas can collect money from the Balabayas, but they have to make a shvua. And that's where Amar ben Nanas, Ketzad Elu ve'elu, Boyin l'day shvua chav. How could both parties, or at least one of the parties, come to a shvua chav, Ela shneim notlim below shvua, rather they each have to collect without a shvua. So in a case where either you told the storekeeper to give your son wheat, or you told him to give your workmen money, one of the people who says they received and one of the people who says they gave it, somebody's lying here. Either the storekeeper gave the wheat or the money, or the people never received it and the storekeeper never gave it. But they can't both be correct. Someone is clearly lying here, or someone clearly has the facts wrong, and therefore the shvuah by necessity is going to be a shvuah shav. But where both people are holding on to the item, it's possible that each of them was magbia, each of them lifted up the item and acquired the item at the same time, and therefore it's not automatically a false shvuah. Therefore, the Mishnah could even be like Benanas. Okay, so now the Gemara wants to know, well, lema masnis and lo kesumchis. Maybe the Mishnah is not like sumchis. The ikesumchis ha'amar mamon ha'muto b'safek cholkin below shvuah. Sumchis famously holds that mamon ha'muto b'safek, when you have money which is disputed, is divided without a shvuah. Right, and we saw Sumchus in Baba Kama at the beginning of the fifth parak, I think it is, parak Shor Shenaga Chesapara, Daf Mem Vav Amud Aleph, where a person's ox gored a person's cow. We're not sure exactly when it happened, so there's money that's disputed. So the Gemara had said Zeklal Gadol B'Din Amotz Mechaveiro Olav Haraya, that we have a major rule when it comes to financial obligations, financial relationships, that whoever is holding on to the item, it's incumbent upon the other person to bring proof that it's his in order to be motzi it from that party. But Sumchus holds no. If you have money which is disputed, you have to divide it without a shvuah. So maybe our Mishnah is not like Sumchus, because Sumchus says you divide the money without a shvuah. Our Mishnah said you divide the money with a shvuah. So ask the Gemara, okay, well, if it's not going to be Kesumchus, ve'elamai, Rabbanan, hamri amotzi mechaveiro al varaya. Are you going to suggest that if the author of the Mishnah is not Sumchus, then it's going to be like the Chachamim? But the Chachamim say, Hamutzi Mechavero Olav Araya, right? Rashi says, Olav Araya Be'edim Be'ilo Lo Gabi Midi V'hacha Cholkin B'Shvuah. Generally, the Chachamim would say, Hamutzi Mechavero Olav Araya, you have to bring the proof to remove the item from your friend with witnesses. And here we're saying that they divide it without a shvuah. So it doesn't seem to fit the position of the Rabbanan either. So it says the Gemara, Hai Mai, what's the problem with it being like the Rabbanan? Iyamar b'shlam Rabbanan, hatam delo tafsi tarvayhu, Amru Rabbanan Amos Mechaber El Baraya, but Hacha de Tarbayu Tafsi, Pagila Belo Shavua. It could be like the Rabbanan. If you say it's like the Rabbanan, maybe only there in Shor Shenaga Chesapara, where both people are not holding on to the money that they're disputing, maybe there the Rabbanan said, Amotzi Mechaber El Baraya. Only one person is holding on to the money in theory, and the other person has to bring proof to remove it from him. But here, where they're both holding on to it, maybe they divide it with the Shvua, and thus it could even be like the Rabbanan. Eliyam Artsumchus, Hashta Umahatam, Dolotavsi Tarayu, Cholkin, Belo Shvua, Hacha de Tarayu Tavsila, Lokoshakain. But if you're going to suggest that the author of the Mishnah is Sumchus, then if Sumchus, in the case of Shor Shenaga Chapara, where they're not both holding on to the item, still Sumchus said that they could divide the item without a Shvua, then here, where they are both holding on to the item, shouldn't it follow logically that they should split it without a Shvua? So how could our Mishnah say that you split it with a Shvua if it's like Sumchus? It doesn't seem to make sense. It's possible that it could be like the Rabbanan, but how could the Mishnah be like Sumchus? So answers the Gemara, Afilu Tema Sumchus, Ki Amar Sumchus Shema B'Shema, Aval Bari Ubari Lo Amar. Maybe the Mishnah could even be like Sumchus. We saw this also in Baba Kama, because maybe Sumchus only holds his principle that Mamon Amuto B'Safik Cholken B'Lo Raya, that when you have money which is disputed, you split it, below Shvua, that you split it without an oath. Maybe that's only in a case of Shema V'Shema, where each party is not confident, is not completely certain in their claims. Aval Bari Ubari Lo Amar, when each party is confident of their claim, they're certain of the claim that they're making, maybe Sumchus did not say, Mamon Amut B'Safik Cholken B'Lo Shvua, that you split it without a Shvua, maybe in such a case, Sumchus would require a Shvua, and thus he could accord with our Mishnah. So says the Gemara, okay, well, that's fine if you assume that Sumchus makes a split between Shema and Shema, where each party is not certain, and Bari Ubari, where each party is certain. But Ulurabba Bar Rafuna, da Amar Amar Sumchus, Afilu Bari Ubari, Ma'ikal Neymar. But according to Rabba Bar Rafuna, who says that Sumchus said his statement, of Mamon Amut B'Safik Cholken B'Lo Shvua, that you divide the money without an oath, even in a case of Bari Ubari, even in a case where both parties are confident of the claim that they're making, then Ma'ikal Neymar. What are you going to say? How could the Mishnah accord with Sumchus? So it says the Gemara, Afilu Tema Sumchus, Ki Amar Sumchus, Hecha de Ika Drora de Mamona, Aval Hecha de Leka Drora de Mamona, Lo. You could even say that the Mishnah is like Sumchus, even according to Rabba Bar Avuna, because maybe Sumchus only said his statement of Mamona Muta B'Safik, Cholken B'Lo Shvua, whether it's Shema or Shema, where both parties are not confident, or whether there's Bari or Bari and both parties are confident, that's only in a case where there's a Drora de Mamona. Let's get to that in 1 second, exactly what that means. But literally, it means a suffix about the money. But in a case where there's no suffix about the money, maybe some of us would not say, Mamon Amutos B'Safik, Cholken B'Lo Shvua, that you split it without a Shvua, rather you would split it with a Shvua. Now, what exactly is Drar Der Mamona? So that's a big machloket between Rashi and Tosfos. I said that Drar Der Mamona is literally just a suffix Mamon. So that's essentially what Rashi says. If you look in Rashi, Drar Der Mamona, Rashi says Drar Der Mamona is a Chesron Mamon. A loss of money. If one party will receive something against the proper din, against what's actually right, that'll be causing the other person a loss. Even if they're and if we exempt the other person without having to pay, then the other party is going to lose out. But Tosu says that's not exactly what a drar de mamona is. Tosu says a drar de mamona is not just where there's a financial loss, but it's perish. Tosu di mamachel hecha de ika drar de mamona perish below tano seim yesh suffik la beis din. It's a case where without the claims that the parties are making, without them coming in front of beis din has something they have to deal with. They have a suffik about mamon of what they're supposed to do. The yesh la echad tfiya al chavero below tano seim, where a person has a claim against his friend. Without a taina, kigon b'shor shenaga chesapara, and he brings that case from Baba Metzia. But essentially, what Rashi and Tosfos from Baba Kama rather. But what Rashi and Tosfos are arguing is basically Rashi says a case of drar de mamona is any case where the person is going to lose out financially. Tosfos says it's only a case of drar de mamona if without the claims that the parties are making, Beis Din has something they need to deal with. Our case we're establishing as deleka drar de mamona. There's no chesron mamon. There's no suffik mamon. That fits really nicely with Tosfos' claim, because we have two people just showing up and saying that this talus is entirely mine. So Beis Din wouldn't have had to get involved. They wouldn't have thought anything else. They wouldn't have had anything to deal with without these people coming in front of us. And thus, without these people coming in front of us, there's no drar de mamona, there's no chesr mamon, suffik mamon that we have to deal with. That's why our case is a case of leka drar de mamona. But ask the Gemara, v'lav kal v'chomehu, couldn't we make a logical inference between the cases? Umahatam de'ika drar de mamona lamar. The ika drar de mamona lamar. In a case of shor shenaga chesapara, where each party has a potential loss of value, a potential loss of money. Ve'ika lemeimar kula lemar. Ve'ika lemeimar kula lemar. And you could say that each party entirely owns the item, depending on which way the suffix goes. Amar sumchus, mamana muta basafik, cholkin below shvua. Nonetheless, in such a case, sumchus still held that we can divide the money without a shvua. Then hacha, the lekadrar der mamona, the ika lememar de tarvayuhi, lo kol shekin. In our case, where there's no chesra mamon, and where it's possible to say that the item belongs to both of them, shouldn't it follow even more logically, all the more so, that some places say, Mamon amuto basafik cholkin below shvuah, Rashi explains that in our case, there's no chesron mamon. Ve'od, additionally, you could say that the talis belongs to both people if they acquired it, if they lifted it up at the same time. So then, shouldn't Sumchus all the more so say that in our case, Mamon amuto basafik cholkin below shvuah? So answers the Gemara, Afilu Tema, right? And therefore, it would seem that the Mishnah couldn't be authored by Sumchus, because if Sumchus holds Mamon amuto basafik cholkin below shvuah, that you'd split the item without a shvua, in the case of Shorsh and Agasapara, it should seem to follow logically that he should all the more so hold that position in our Mishnah of Shnayim Ochsim Betalis. So says the Gemara, Afilu Tema Sumchus, you could even say that the Mishnah in Bava Metzia is like Sumchus, even though all these difficulties with doing so, because shvua zo midirabanan hi, because the shvua that's required in the Mishnah of Shnayim Ochsim is only a shvua midirabanan, kidir Rabbi Yochanan, like Rabbi Yochanan. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan said, Shvua zu tekanas chachamin hi. This shvua that's imposed in the Mishnah, where we say each person has to swear that no less than half of it is theirs, Sheloya is only a rabbinic institution. Sheloya he kol echad ve'echad holeich betokef betalito shel chavero ve'omer shelihu. So that each person will not be able to go and grab on to the talis of his friend and say, it's mine. Essentially, what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is, we didn't want each party to be able to go grab onto a person's item and say, this talis is also mine. And then according to Sumchus, you could be cholek below shvua, mamon amutu basafik cholkin below shvua, we're going to divide money that's disputed without an oath. Therefore, the Rabbanan instituted a shvua as a safeguard to make sure that a person's not just going to go and grab onto his friend's item, because he knows that if he does and they have a dispute, they're going to be required to make a shvua and they're not going to want to swear falsely. So thus, even if you assume, generally in all cases, we couldn't get out of this issue, Sumchus is going to hold, Mamon amuta basafik cholkin below shvua, that we would divide the disputed money without a shvua, Sumchus is going to agree to the concept of our Mishnah, because there'll be a rabbinic institution, we're always going to require a shvua midirabanan with the money that's disputed in such a case, so that you don't go grab onto your friend's item, and thus the Mishnah could even accord like Sumchus. Okay, I think we'll hold it over here. Thank you very much.